Hello, TSF family. We wanted to start off by saying thank you. Thank you for listening to this podcast and for your hard work to love yourself more and for your feedback.
Can you believe it's been 3 years that we've been doing this spiritual fix, and it has been such a beautiful labor of love for Anna and me.
We have loved doing this work. We've loved hearing from you, and we love exploring ourselves and each other alongside our listeners.
We wanted to put out the call for 3 ways that you can help support us to support you.
One, we would love you to leave us a review on iTunes or follow us on Spotify.
2, drop us an email and let us know how much the podcast means to you.
And 3, you can donate monthly or even just once to our PayPal patronage.
Every little bit helps, and we are so grateful to those of you who have donated already. Thank you.
You help make this podcast possible.
Thanks, y'all.
You can go to our website, www.thisspiritualfix.com, for information on how to pledge as well as to email us.
This Spiritual Fix presents
TSF Shorts,
a potluck of preludes between episodes. Hello, TSF family, and welcome to this short, where today we are going to be interviewing Elena about her experiences with the Primal Wounds. Enjoy. Hello, Anna.
Hello, Christina.
And hello, Elena. Welcome.
Hey, you guys.
Welcome to our special series where we are interviewing listeners like you who have journeyed with us through the Primal Wounds and have learned something about yourself from the series that we did 2 years ago and that we're re-airing now on the Primal Wounds.
Yeah. Welcome, Elena. So I love, this is so wonderful for us. Because Anna and I love the opportunity to like connect with our listeners. And why don't you just tell us a little bit about yourselves? We'd love to hear more.
My name's Elena. I live in near Tampa, Florida. I have 3 daughters, 15, 11, and 7. And I have a dog and 2 cats. And I love the beach.
Nice, nice. Yes. How long have you been listening to the podcast for?
For 2 years. I've been since the beginning.
That's amazing. That's amazing. Yeah. All right. So we're going to kind of jump in here and, you know, we're going to be talking about rejection today, but obviously we all know that we have all of the primal wounds. So just to start off, do you just kind of want to tell us any like significant experiences or from your childhood that contributed to kind of understanding of the fact that rejection, you know, was your primary primal wound, or kind of where you got to in the process of discovering that rejection was your primary primal wound?
I started my healing journey about 4 years ago as I was ending, like, or in the last year of my last toxic relationship. And I started stretching for long periods of time, just intuitively started stretching, spending hours, and later learned that I was actually healing trauma the whole time. And so progressively I got into meditation and Reiki, and through this healing journey, I feel like I've been ticking like a clock as I unheal and unlayer everything. Like, everything's divinely timed and works out perfectly. And I don't understand certain things until I get to certain points and it all makes sense at once. But I feel like I got to the root of my rejection wound through your podcast. Y'all's podcast has been a big part of my healing journey. So my rejection wound happened the day I was born. I was born a third girl of a woman who didn't want girls at all. And she tried to find out my gender while she was pregnant. And I wouldn't open my legs. I wouldn't show her. And then I was born and I was a girl. And she was so upset that she didn't hold me till the next day. So fast forward, as I'm growing up, I have like these like almost like intuitive memories that I've picked up through the years of, so I've heard my mom tell a story about the day I was born. I heard her talk about it, like not to me, but in front of me. And so that's how I've learned. So that memory was brought back to me.
Wow. Wow. That is so intense. Right. Especially to be given a non non-clear, you know, like something that's pre-memory, like that's pre, and then to be given back the story from the perspective of your rejector is so
as if nothing happened. Like the way she says the story, it was like as if it was like, you know, hold my beer, like that kind of story.
I'm so sorry.
And that has basically projected like how the rest of my life laid out. But I was also with that memory, I was also given a beautiful gift. I got this download about Jesus holding my heart that day and actually like placed the protection over my heart. So it's almost like it's sealed, like right close to my heart. And I haven't quite broken through it all the way. I'm close. I'm definitely getting more and more of it every day. But that's the gift I was given, where like Jesus was like, he's been with me from the get-go. Like, and I know I signed up for it, and I know it was all a part of the plan, all the mastermind. But I've been really positive about my whole life like that. So I've worked backwards. I went from like toxic positivity to like, okay. But I feel like it's a blessing too, because my wounds are so deep that I have the energetic understanding of the purpose in it as I'm going through the pain.
You know, the image I got when you said that with the heart, yeah, was, you know how queens are introduced into colonies with the candy coat? So basically, like, in order to acclimate a queen bee into a new hive, there's a candy coating around the outside of the bee, and the bees have to like nibble their way through it, so that by the time they get to the queen, they're like totally acclimated to her. And that's what it feels like, your journey. Like when I see that intuitively, it's like your journey is like you have like Jesus put this candy coating around your heart, and you've just been like working your way through it to like unlock that kind of like queen bee potential in terms of its like beauty. So I just wanted to tell you that, because that was totally the image I got.
And in that case, I birthed three of my little bee workers, because they've been helping me the entire time.
How beautiful.
Especially my 15-year-old. Whew, she's got the chisel and hammer. She's been definitely a big learning experience for me. Learning how to love myself. Learning how to heal myself through her.
Wow. That's incredible.
Mm-hmm. How do you think that the primal wound of rejection shaped your beliefs, behaviors, or patterns when you reflect on your relationships with others?
Interesting enough, I listened all these 2 years ago. I re-listened to them all recently. And I have just in my healing journey, I'm coming to like a big block of self-sabotage. Like I'm like, okay, self-sabotage is like showing up like left and right, up and down and all around. And so I have never let anybody close to me. There was a father-in-law figure that I let get the closest to me, but like no one's ever gotten close to me. I didn't have a deep connection with my mom, because I was protected from her, but she rejected me, and she kept me, she took care of me, and I know she did the best she could. I've had to work through a lot of blaming her and be like, okay, it's for me, it's not to me. But I don't have a deep connection with my sister. So like I've come from growing up with like no connection, like not knowing how to connect with people. But no, learning how to be useful, like how to earn your love, what do you need? Like read the room and make you happy, put a smile on their face. Cause I hated any sort of rejection, if my mom was mad or my dad was mad, I felt rejected. I felt like it was my fault. I didn't do something perfect, or I didn't catch it before they got upset or whatever. And then in my relationships, I've always chose people in hindsight that were codependent like me, and like kind of there was something about their energy that felt safe in me to date them, because like they wouldn't leave me somehow. And then once something's triggered in me, I haven't quite figured it out yet, but once something's triggered in me, I basically will shut people out, cut them off, never talk to them again.
Right.
But it also helped me in my healing journey, because I had some 10-year friendships, and just family I needed space from to heal. So it's like I've been able to pull my tools from my trauma and then place them in my healing. So as soon as I was revealed this relationship dynamic and this, and it was just like, as soon as they showed me, I'm like, oh, bye. Like, okay. And then one friend, I actually like wrote a whole long, like, it's me, it's not you, but it was really heartfelt. And she rejected me. So I'm like, oh, okay. I did my job.
Yeah. Yeah. Isn't that interesting? And that was kind of the next place we wanted to go, was this understanding that the rejection's mask, or as I would kind of call it, it's villainy, if you wanted to say that, is in being the fugitive. But it sounds as if you've turned the experience of the fugitive into a place of creating boundaries against those who would reject you, and kind of coming into that healthy place.
Yeah. And something about the seal on my heart, not that I haven't been mean to my sisters and certain people that, you know, were partners that got close to me, but I don't like revenge and I don't like hurting people. And I never, ever wanted anyone to feel any way that I had felt before. So I've been able to cut those people off without being nasty or vindictive or starting drama. It's just like, as soon as it's revealed, it's like, oh, you don't exist to me anymore. And I wish you well.
Yeah. Do you feel filled up by the relationships that you've kept more so once you've kind of created those boundaries?
Yes, I have my best friend, one friend, Julie. She's been in my life for 13 years. And it's funny because one of my relationships is how I met her. She's my middle daughter's aunt. And when we first met, I was basically groomed to dislike her, and she was groomed to dislike me. So we didn't like each other for the first few years that we were around each other. And it was around the time I had my last daughter, we started becoming friends. And she's my best friend, and I can tell her everything. And she's, you know, probably thinks I'm crazy half the things I tell her, but she's just listens and loves me unconditionally and has been there for me on the drop of a dime with my kids. And she's a good one. She's the only one left. And then I have a wonderful relationship with my husband, and he's been on his healing journey, and we've been together for 3.5 years and have worked through a lot together. we've come a long way. So yeah, my children and my husband and Julie.
That's incredible. And that seems like that fills you like in a wonderful way, right? Like that's incredible.
And yeah, I'm actually scared to like create these new friendships. And so that's why I'm working through like, I see the perfectionism and I see the self-sabotage because I want to find something wrong. And I'm like, no, we love everybody. Everybody is their own person. And I can create boundaries if I don't like certain things. I don't have to like know everything beforehand and avoid.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's hard because it's like, if you were to think of it as extending that bridge of intimacy, you're creating a totally different engineering. It's like the first engineering you had was like, you know, like a swinging bridge, right? You know, where it's like at any point you could fall through. And now you're really learning a new construction, and it takes time. And there's like a lot of grace for yourself in that. So that's beautiful.
Yes, I have waves of grace.
As we all do.
When I'm in it, I feel like when I have the ability to like talk about it and like know someone gets it, I can like see myself and have a lot of grace. But like, I don't know a lot of people that are like so energetically deep in the healing journey. Like I've cut every person, place, and thing out of my life. Like I don't do anything, and which I know I need to learn how to have fun, but like the last 4 years of my life have been completely invested in being a better mom and a better person. Because I had no self-identity, none. My identity was, I had 2 years ago, I was driving down the road and had like this huge epiphany. And I realized that I had been masking my whole life, and I had no idea that was my identity, to be who you needed me to be. So I've been working on my, like finding myself.
Yes.
And yes. The last 2 years, like solid. And now I feel like I'm at like the deepest parts, which is like the hardest part, the right where I'm at that candy shell where I like I've made it this far. Like, so how bad do you want it?
Yeah. Yeah. And also to extend that metaphor too, it's like that feeling of like getting the flavor of who you are and learning to not self-reject in that, right? Like not self-sabotage and that, not self. Yeah. Yeah. It's huge. Wonderful.
I was curious if because your first introduction to rejection was because of your gender, if you've found that you had to go through a journey of acceptance for being a woman, like did that play into it at all? Or was her rejection of you just a general feeling versus like, oh, it's bad that I'm a girl or something?
No, I didn't have my level of conscious understanding was very limited. So like there's a lot of layers I have found. So I was so underdeveloped mentally because of the lack of connection and the lack of self-awareness. So my body self-awareness was met by more trauma, the like body shaming for my weight, what I wore, what I ate. I was bought home a box of Splenda, you know, at a very young age and told to use that instead of sugar. So I didn't have a connection to my body. I didn't care about gender at all. I didn't care about boys. I didn't care about sex. I didn't care about relationships. I didn't even know what a relationship was. I just accepted what I was given and had asked no questions. I'm still learning how to ask questions. I just accept everything. I'm like, oh, okay. And then I'm like, oh, wait, that's you're kidding. I never mind. So as far as gender, I'm still coming into my feminine, but I've never not wanted to be a woman, but I did intellectually. I've learned through the healing process. I wanted to be like the perfect son for my mom. So I have a lot of very developed masculine, like taking care of doing, I'm a good doer. And so I realized energetically, like no one knew but me, that I was trying to be the little boy my mom never got. So, but as I'm coming into my feminine, I'm connecting more with my body, and then sex ended up being a way I abused myself. So now that I've healed a lot of that, I'm learning how to like love my body and love my femininity.
Yeah, that's huge. I mean, that's such a huge, you can tell how just massive, right? And the mother hunger that you're experiencing and then having to heal all the other aspects that go along with that in addition to the primal wounds. That's huge. Like, well done. Well done for going into that. Say that.
In what ways do you think your primal wound influenced your self-esteem or self-worth?
Oh, I didn't have any self-worth on top of being rejected and just being body shamed and a lot of humiliation. I didn't have any worth. I think my heart, you know, parts of you are frozen when there's trauma that happens. So like, I feel like my childlike heart always drove me, maybe it wasn't seen on the outside of me, but it's kind of what drove me. And I love to do things for people. I love to make people happy. So it was never initiated in resentment or manipulation, even though it is manipulative to like do things to try and get your needs met. It was never conscious. It was just hypervigilance, trying to figure out how to make these people happy and like doing it and trying to do it perfectly. So I've had to work through not doing things for people because I quit my job 2 years ago doing hair. And I couldn't even charge what I was worth because I felt bad for charging people more than they could afford. And I always wanted to do more for people's hair than, you know, they were willing to pay for. So I always sabotaged my time, sabotaged my worth, sabotaged what I was, you know, valuable to.
That's really tough. And the fact that you're into that space, right, of really recognizing the self-sabotage too, it's like all part of that healing journey. So speaking of healing journeys, like in terms of the tools that you've chosen to kind of tackle all of this work that you've been doing, what have been the, you know, have you sought therapy? Have you sought, like, what have been your favorite tools or what have been the most effective tools for you?
I go to a somatic therapist, and I'm so grateful because my husband's insurance covers the whole thing. And she does breath work and meditation with me. And I just found her like a few months ago. But so before then, I did a lot of meditation and stretching, a lot of guided meditations. I have all of your meditations and the workbooks. I haven't done the workbooks yet, but I've done all the meditations. Ice baths.
Ice baths.
Yeah.
Yeah. It sounds like you use a lot of the physical to access that, which is like a beautiful methodology, right? Because it's not using the mind, which so many people choose to do. Like, that's for me. I'm like totally in that, like, oh, I'm just going to be a jhana yogi and try and figure everything out with my mind. But it sounds like you took this beautiful approach of like recognizing that your cells are going to more easily access that.
Yeah. And your rejection happened on the physical, right? It was about your body. So it's like so fitting and beautiful that your body is the vehicle for the healing. So I have a question about your mask. So we talk about a lot how with rejection, the mask is the fugitive. So it's escapism. I know, like, when I escape, I just get really busy. Like, if I don't want to connect with my kids, I just go get busy. You know, I guess I'm rejecting them on some level when I do that, or maybe I'm just making time for myself. I don't know. You know, that's like the, am I fucking up my
kid? Where's the line?
Yeah. Like that never ending question. Am I doing the best for others? Anyways, that aside, what has been your go-to fugitive behavior?
Shutting people out and overeating. So like overeating, making myself feel miserable or to slow me down, shutting people out, cutting people off, being silent. I was very quiet growing up, unless I was trying to be annoying or something. I don't know, but like never really talking about much of anything. Never asked questions. I sure asked my parents for stuff just to get yelled at, you know, to be rejected. But I was very silent. I think I feel like I cut my voice off for myself. Like I self-sabotaged my voice. I am learning that words are my love language, and I still haven't quite gotten full access to them. They come at the right times, but there's a lot of times where I say a lot of gibberish and I'm like, what was that? But yeah, cutting my throat chakra off, or sealing my throat chakra, or whatever I did to it, and cutting people off.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. So with your, you know, the kind of triggers that still come up as you're in your healing process right now, what is the way that you kind of deal with how those, any of the primal wounds, whether it's rejection or any of them, like how are you dealing with it in the moment, right? Obviously we have kind of like those blanket support things like somatic therapists, things along those lines. And maybe you use that, but like on a day-to-day level, what are your glimmers looking like if glimmers are the opposite of triggers?
I've finally gotten to a point where it's slowed down enough to where I can see the trigger, feel the trigger. Sometimes I will, you know, take a minute to myself and calm down before I respond. Sometimes I still react. Sometimes I am able to like just take a moment and like take a breath. And about a year ago, I would actually leave the room and do breath work like right on the spot when my daughter triggered me. Go outside and take a deep breath. A breath has been a huge tool in my healing.
It's a wonderful thing to recognize that you have tools and then you just keep kind of building on those tools, right? And sometimes they don't always work. Sometimes it's like, it's a bigger thing and you do what you can with that. But the fact that you have, that you're actually implementing the tools that you've learned, right? That you're, the fact, like I try and think about doing breath work on the spot, and I am just never, like, it takes me a good 10, 15, maybe 20 minutes or a half an hour to even think of being like, oh, I should probably start breathing because I don't think I've actually breathed at all. Or I'm breathing very shallowly whenever I get triggered or whenever I get overstimulated. So that's wonderful.
Yeah, I feel like my whole life I've just been guided by God. Like I had no control over my life. I'm blessed. So my mom actually, with the body shaming, made me do this breath work exercise video with her when I was, I gotta guess, 6 or 7-ish maybe.
Wow.
And so later on, I didn't know I had anxiety till I was in my late 20s. But when I, as a child, before the age of 12, when my parents were still together, I would have anxiety at night and I would go to bed on my own, like at 8 o'clock every night with nobody's telling me to. And my mom talks about that too. And I would do those exercises. So they, and what I learned, what I felt like I was doing was stretching my lungs. Like I felt like my lungs were contracting, and I would take the deepest breath I can and hold it and push. So I was like stretching my lungs out and then breathe it out. And that was basically what the exercise videos were.
Oh, cool. Have you done that with your daughters?
I have tried. My younger ones will kind of participate. My oldest one, she's a fighter. And she doesn't want anything to do with my somatic therapist.
And that's funny.
And I actually did it in cat-cow, and I didn't even know what cat-cow was at that age.
That's
maybe just past life yogi.
That's what I'm saying. Like, there's obviously some spontaneous, we talk about grace, right? There's like some spontaneous grace that was like, all right, we have got to give her something that is going to get her through this. Right. Yep. And the fact that your children, you know, I mean, I know we're not putting out report cards for ourselves yet, you know, when it comes to raising your kids, it's like, but at the same time, like the fact that recognizing that that's either not going to work for them, or maybe it's not to the point where they need that kind of intervention, you know, it's like, it's there, it's available, you know, if they choose to use it. Yeah.
And when I feel myself getting anxious in the conversation with them, I cue them to take a deep breath. I'm like, take a deep breath. And then I do it too. And then just to let them know, like, I'm not here to fight with you. Like, yeah. We both got big feelings. Let's take a deep breath and move forward.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I love that. Mm-hmm. So one of the things we talked about in the podcast, if you remember, is that as you heal, your triggers and your reaction to your triggers becomes either less intense, less frequent, or it doesn't last as long. So something that used to make you feel rejected for days is now just a few hours. Like, since you started your healing journey, what are some signposts for you that you've healed because they're things that don't trigger you as strongly as they used to?
When me and my husband are working through something and I know it's not his fault and that, and so I just stay calm and I know it's my feeling and he sits through my grumpiness and I sit through anything that may be annoying me about him. And we've done enough work to where we can talk through it and come back together at the end, basically within that conversation. And then, so what was the question again? Or did I answer it?
Oh, that you answered it. So I guess arguments are getting resolved easier.
Yeah. And like with my daughter, so my whole life experience has been through mainly feel. So now that I have more conscious connection, I'm, instead of having the physical trigger and then the physical reaction, I now can feel the physical trigger, allow it to come up, and like I almost slow down, which is my freeze response now being used as a tool. So I slow down and I'm very aware. I have a huge awareness and I'm a big observer. So my silence has also now being used as a tool because I don't verbally react. And I can observe the feeling, observe what's happening, observe my urge to punch the wall or the window or my husband and kind of just, I let the waves flow through.
That is so inspiring.
I love it. Yeah.
That's really beautiful. Inspiring. So kind of as we wrap up here today, which has been incredible. I've just loved all of your insights, Elena. It's just amazing. what would be advice that you would give to some, to people who are looking to go down this journey?
I would say always find your breath. It's the first thing you were given when you were born. So it's always going to be your most powerful healer.
And remember,
humility, gratitude, acceptance, done.
Let me tell you all a riddle. There are four girls and four apples in a basket. Every girl takes an apple, yet one apple remains in the basket. How is this possible? The answer? One girl took the basket. She took the last apple while it was in the basket. Sometimes all it takes is a perspective shift. This is my specialty, y'all, and I am opening up two spots in the next 2 months for dedicated journeyers to work with me to find peace, purpose, and most importantly, perspective. In these journeys, we co-create a curriculum that suits your current blocks, goals, and needs, and we use all the tools: shadow work, books, fiction, remote viewing, intuition, meditation, guided journeys, energy healing, dreaming techniques, you name it, we do it. And all to achieve a commonly held set of objectives. And if you're interested in hearing more, book a free call with me at www.chriswiltsy.com/discover.